right, y'all. Welcome to the Scott Horton Show. I am the director of the Libertarian Institute, editorial director of antiwar.com, author of the book Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and I've recorded more than 5,000 interviews going back to 2003, all of which are available at scotthorton.org. You can also sign up for the podcast feed. The full archive is also available at youtube.com/ScottHortonShow. All right, you guys, introducing Ariel Zients from the Rapid City Journal there in South Dakota, author of this important news story. Grandmother says Eagle Butte woman should have never been transferred to prison while pregnant. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I really appreciate you joining us here on the show today. So this is the story of, is it Andrea or Andrea?
Andrea, but her family, she goes by Andy.
Andy Circle Bear. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes, and she also, her maiden name is High Bear, and that's actually how her obituary was written.
I see. Okay. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and then the reason that she's dead is because she got COVID in prison. And what was she doing in prison?
Sure. And first to clarify, we do not know where she contracted it, but she began showing symptoms while in prison. And then ended up dying in the hospital, but of course under federal custody. And in terms of, you asked what she was doing in prison?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sure. She was convicted of, it's a crime that most people probably haven't heard of, which is called maintaining a home for drug distribution. But it wasn't even her home. If you look at the details, what it seems like what was happening is she was maybe just helping someone, basically, maybe sell drugs, but that she probably wasn't the main person. Because, again, she was not charged with distributing, and it wasn't her home. And then she was sentenced to...
Well, did she live there?
No.
So she...
Her grandmother told us that she never... lived there. She was living with her grandma, and I believe the factual basis says that she didn't live there either.
Because it sounds like, and I guess I'm speculating a little bit here, but it sounds like that law is written for people who own a house, but then someone who lives there sells the drugs out of it, and they try to pretend that they're deniable, but this law is to make that not good enough. But here, she's just a guest at a house where drugs are being sold.
Right. Apparently. Or maybe they're interpreting it as she helped maintain the house. Like she.
And can you say why these led to federal charges rather than just local charges?
Sure. Because it was on the Cheyenne River Sioux. The Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation. So most bigger crimes, like it's called like the Major Crimes Act, will automatically go to federal prosecution. I also believe that drug cases, if they're big drug cases, can go to federal, to the federal level.
And then
no
do you know, were
they
selling crack and meth to school children, or what exactly was the...
It said meth. It did not mention, I mean, the person who she sold it to wasn't an informant. So mm-hmm. Unclear if that means it was a undercover agent or a, civilian acting on behalf of the government. Mm-hmm.
But it was somebody else who was charged with actually selling the drugs. She was just charged with being there. Is that right?
Well, that's actually unclear if anyone else was charged in conjunction with her case. That's something I can look into.
I see. But so the record of it at the time, whatever journalism was done at the time, it didn't say whether there was more than one person charged?
This was such a low... This is not something that you would even typically report on when mm-hmm. it happened. It's not, because again, it's not a major drug distribution ring. Right. That's
but based on the charges,
caught.
It sounds like she was nearby when someone else sold meth to someone else, and she got 2 years in the federal pen mm-hmm. for that.
Yeah, it did say that she did actually do the sales, but she may have just been working on behalf of someone and not have been the main distributor. But yeah, she got sentenced to 26 months, which is just over 2 years. But what's also important to know is she would have actually served several months less than that, because you get credit for time served when it's federal cases.
Mm-hmm.
And she had been, you know, when she was initially arrested, she had a few days or weeks of credit for that. I'm not sure how long before she was released pretrial. But then once she pleaded guilty, which was back in October 2019, she had been jailed mostly since then. She had a few times she was furloughed.
Mm-hmm. I see. And jailed, you mean in the local jail awaiting transfer to the federal lockup?
Yes. And she was actually held in, we know of two jails, the one in Pierre, which is close to the court where she would have been, where she would have had her case. And then in Winter, which is south of that.
Mm-hmm. And then can you tell us why it was that she was transferred to Fort Worth, Texas?
Yes, again, because it's a federal case. So when you are sentenced to federal prison, you go anywhere in the country. And the only prison in South Dakota, the only federal prison in South Dakota is a men's low security facility. So she's a woman, so she couldn't go there. And then what's interesting is that the prison she was sentenced to is the only, it's a medical specialty prison for women, and it's the only one for women.
Mm-hmm.
So they're basically acknowledging that she, you know, because of her pregnancy and her pregnancy, the pregnancy itself wasn't necessarily high risk, but the birth was. And this is according to my sister, who's a midwife, because she's had multiple previous C-sections. And anytime you give birth after multiple C-sections, mm-hmm. the birth itself is high risk.
I see. And so now they think that she was sickened somewhere either in the jail or during the transfer because she arrived sick in Fort Worth. Is that right?
I don't believe she arrived sick. Her grandma, she called her grandma right when she arrived. So there's a new rule with coronavirus. Once you arrive, everyone is quarantined for 14 days. Mm-hmm. So she called her grandma to say, hey, heads up, I'm going into quarantine. I won't be able to call you. She did not mention being sick to her grandma then, but maybe she was rushed for time and didn't mention it. But again, we still don't know where she got it because you can contract it earlier and then not show symptoms. So it could right. have been at the Winter Jail. It could have been from the U.S. Marshals or someone on the plane, or it could have been when she was in the prison.
Mm-hmm.
Winter, that the county it's in, it has zero cases, but I mean, there are asymptomatic people, uh-huh. but I mean, but theoretically it could be, we don't know where it is. And that's something no one yet has answered me, you know, who will be doing that investigation, doing that contact tracing. That's something I'm working on figuring out.
Mm-hmm. And then, so what's this about a whistleblower, complaining that they knew that she was a suspected symptomatic case that day? Which day is that that they're referring to? You?
Sure. That's the 28th. Let me pull up this timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, yes. March 28th. Okay. And just credit to that whistleblower complaint was discovered by Vice News. So in their press release, the Bureau of Prisons said, yes, she went to the hospital on March 28th, but they just said it was for pregnancy concerns. Whereas the whistleblower complaint should know the prison was treating her as a suspected case by that date. Her grandma also said that when she talked to her on the 31st, she mentioned being sick for several days. And then a Texas TV news outlet, this is really interesting, you know, when she gave birth, April 1st, they reported on the birth through hospital sources. And again, those hospital sources say that during that first visit on March 28th, she also had symptoms. So there's at least three sources, hospital sources, the whistleblower complaint, and the grandma, who all say that she was sick at least by the 28th.
And then she says that she was sick in the prison for a few days before they ever sent her to the hospital.
Well, they did send her to the hospital on March 28th. But again, the Bureau of Prison said that was only related to pregnancy concerns.
So it was the hospital that was ignoring her sickness.
I guess it would have been the prison. Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, I guess it would have been the hospital that would have decided to discharge her. Of course, the prison could have brought her back between the 28th and the 31st. And in terms of the prison discharging her, I mean, this is something we're seeing with coronavirus all over. It's pretty hard to get admitted to the hospital, like, even if you're, you know, even if you have symptoms, even if you test positive, there's certain requirements for you to become an inpatient. Mm-hmm. And that does seem to be based on, you know, medical reasons. We just don't know why they made that specific decision in this case to send her back to prison.
Mm-hmm. And then, so I'm sorry, I'm getting my dates confused. When they sent her back, okay. that was how many days after she'd given birth?
No.
That was before.
Okay, I'll explain it. Sure. So March 28th was her first visit to the hospital. That's the one where she was then sent back. And this is the one where the Bureau of Prisons says it was related to pregnancy concerns. But the three other sources say, no, she also had COVID symptoms.
I see.
Then she went back on March 31st. That's when she was permanently admitted and she never left. That's where she died.
Mm-hmm. And then the baby was born the next day. And then when did she die? April the what? Do you remember?
She died April 28th. And what's also interesting is that when she was admitted on March 31st, she was well enough to speak to her grandmother on the phone.
So she was on a ventilator for the whole month of April then?
Yes. She was ventilated because they mentioned that she gave birth via C-section while ventilated. So sometime after she spoke to her grandma on the 31st and between giving birth the next day, she was ventilated already.
I see. And then she didn't die until just a few days ago.
April 28th.
Hold on just one second. Be right back. So you're constantly buying things from Amazon.com. Well, that makes sense. They bring it right to your house. So what you do, though, is click through from the link in the right-hand margin at scotthorton.org, and I'll get a little bit of a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. Won't cost you a thing. Nice little way to help support the show. Again, that's right there in the margin at scotthorton.org. Hey, y'all, check it out. The Libertarian Institute, that's me and my friends, have published three great books this year. First is No Quarter, The Ravings of William Norman Grigg. He was the best one of us. Now he's gone, but this great collection is a truly fitting legacy for his fight for freedom. I know you'll love it. Then there's Coming to Palestine by the great Sheldon Richman. It's a collection of 40 important essays he's written over the years about the truth behind the Israel-Palestine conflict. You'll learn so much and highly value this definitive libertarian take on the dispossession of the Palestinians and the reality of their brutal occupation. And last but not least is the great Ron Paul, The Scott Horton Show Interviews, 2004 through 2019. Interview transcripts of all of my interviews of the Good Doctor over the years on all the wars, money, taxes, the police state, and more. So how do you like that? Pretty good, right? Find them all at libertarianinstitute.org/books. You need stickers for your band or your business? Well, Rick and the guys over at thebumpersticker.com have got you covered. Great work, great prices, sticky things with things printed on them. Whatever you need, thebumpersticker.com will get it done right for you. Thebumpersticker.com.
There's a few quotes in here from the different people all denying that it was their responsibility, right? The prison says it was the hospital and the hospital says it was the prison. And then they all agree that nobody knows and it's nobody's fault.
I haven't spoken with anyone with the hospital, but basically how the chain of the people are kind of deferring it to other agencies. So the Bureau of Prisons is saying, look, we are limiting internal transfers, you know, from one prison to another, but we have, our hands are tied. We have no choice but to accept inmates that the marshals bring to us. And then the marshals say, we have no choice but to bring them to the prison when the prison requests it. And then the jail says, the marshals came to get her. And then the marshals, and this is something not in this story, this will be in a follow-up story because they responded after I published it. The marshals said that they received clearance from her healthcare provider for her to fly. They will not say who that healthcare provider is, and neither will the jail. But I imagine it would be a jail staffer or a. The jail did tell me that they have their own medical staff and they also have contractors. So someone cleared the flying for the marshals. Mm-hmm. And I've emailed the Department of Justice. They have not responded. Basically, I'm asking them, you know, will you investigate first where she got sick? was she properly cared for? But also, so the Department of Justice has acknowledged the danger of coronavirus to inmates. They've told prosecutors, keep the pandemic in mind when you request pretrial detention. They've told, and then they've told the prisons to evaluate who they can send release on home release, mm-hmm. like home detention. I mean, I don't know how good of a job they're doing releasing people, but the point is they've at least acknowledged it. Right. Whereas it seems like they've taken zero steps for protecting people going to prison for the first time, like Andrea. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the questions I've asked them is, in the given her death, will you consider creating precautions or delaying transfers for high risk patients? And they have not answered.
Yeah. Well, you know, you brought up there about the hospitals turning people away, and there have been reports. There was one just the other day of a guy that they turned away two or three times. In fact, there was a lady in my county here in Central Texas who they turned away two or three times before they finally let her in, and then it was too late. Happened to a guy I was reading about just the other day. So it sounds like that's the most likely explanation here, is they should have let her in on the 28th. Maybe she would have died anyway. It sounds like she was on a ventilator the whole time. But if they had induced birth then, she'd have... I'm sorry?
Or they didn't test her on the 28th. They only tested her after she arrived. So maybe she wasn't, maybe she didn't have symptoms sick enough to be, you know, admitted, but maybe giving her a test. Right. But again, they're not going to talk about their individual decisions about an individual patient.
Right. But it does make sense that even if she didn't check all the boxes, if she's almost due and has COVID, that might be enough to get in there. And then, you know, if they'd begun treatment a few days earlier, then it seems like there's, you know, on the margin, that means that she probably would have had a better chance. But she certainly would have had a better chance if she hadn't have been in custody at all.
Right.
But, you know, just a little bit more collateral damage in the war on drugs. I'm pretty sure that South Dakota's methamphetamine problem is solved now, though, right? She's not.
No. There's still a that's still a crisis here.
Mm-hmm. And arresting and killing all the Indians isn't solving it somehow. All right. Well, I kind of ran out of questions to ask you here, but I'm sure I must be missing some kind of important detail or another. Is there something else we should focus on here?
Sure. Well, if you want to know a little bit more about Andrea, I can tell you about her.
Sure.
You know, who she was as a person. So yeah. She was 30, and she already had 5 kids, and, you know, she was pregnant with her 6. The baby survived after the C-section. So now she has 6 children without a mother. Mm-hmm. She's a member of the Cheyenne River Sioux tribe. Her grandmother describes her as just being really close to her family. And then really spending most of her time as a full-time stay-at-home mother since she had so many children, and she really loved them. And there's just some sad and, you know, quotes, but it also shows how much she cared for her family. So like I said, she called when she was admitted on the 31st, and the grandmother said that Andrea mentioned that, she said, this is quote, she told me that she loved me and told me to tell her kids that she loved them. So basically that was, even though she was being admitted to the hospital, she was asking her grandma to make sure that her children are cared for and to make sure they know that she loves them. So I just think that shows something about her personality.
Yeah.
And then another sad thing is that the grandma drove all the way down to Texas, mm-hmm. to pick up her great grandson, Andrea's child, and wasn't, even though they were in the same hospital, obviously different units, wasn't allowed to see Andrea even through a window. I mean, obviously there's COVID-19 prevention methods and you're not allowed to be in the same room with them. But they wouldn't even let her see her through a window. The grandmother said that doctors told her that was on the order of the prison, but that's not 100% clear. But I just, either way, that's just a very sad thought to think that she was so physically close to seeing her granddaughter and wasn't able to.
Yeah. Well, and obviously, you know, it sounds pretty clear here too that she wasn't allowed, Andy wasn't allowed to spend any time with her newborn baby either.
No, she would have been, yeah, like heavily sedated. And the baby was premature. So the baby would have been, you know, immediately put in the, you know, in an incubator or under, you know, neonatal care.
Sure. So, and then, I mean, I guess, so then she died. So she was in an induced coma and died while unconscious on the machine. Do you know?
The grandma didn't know if she was, you know, in a coma, and I'm not sure about the exact medical state, but the grandma said she would have been heavily, I mean, my understanding is if you're on a ventilator, you are heavily seduced by drugs or just not aware of yourself naturally.
It really is sad, sad for the surviving kids and the grandma and for her to die alone like that over a little bit of speed, which is nothing.
Yes. Let's see what else. And her body was returned and she was buried yesterday. So Thursday. And it was, you know, a small family funeral since the, Cheyenne River Sioux tribe, like, and then their funeral home, like all others are taking precautions and not allowing mass gatherings.
Yeah. Well, I guess the reason this has gotten a lot of national attention, I've seen the headline going around and that kind of thing, is because of the COVID tie. But this kind of thing happens all the time to poor and minorities especially, but not only, get caught up on selling drugs to a willing customer. As you were talking about, a lot of times an undercover cop pretending to be a willing customer, and then, you know, all of them adults, and then they go off to prison and for one reason or another, never make it home again.
And the judge, if you look at his sentencing recommendations, like he admitted that she needed treatment because so judges can recommend a prison for people and recommend they be part of specific programs, but it's ultimately up to the Bureau of Prisons. But he recommended that he called her an excellent candidate for their drug treatment program. So he admitted that, yes, she needs help herself.
Yeah. Well, too late for that now.
Yes.
And then, but so, I hope in your follow-up that you'll be hunting down the story too of where it was that she got it. Have there been any of these marshals have come down sick since then, or was it in the holding facility or where it was that she picked that up?
Yeah, that's something I'm trying to track down. I've, Texas, I think, because it's such a big country, that their state health department isn't the one who does the contact tracing. It's the individual county. So I'll contact that county. They would be the ones who would, I believe, do the investigation, maybe in conjunction with the Bureau of Prisons.
Yeah. All right. Now, you mentioned that the baby was born premature, but it turned out okay so far?
Yes, the baby's healthy. Twice tested negative for the virus. And is being raised by multiple, you know, grandparents and great grandparents.
Yeah, man. All right. Well, that's a hell of a story, but I sure appreciate your hard work on it. It's really important. You know, people, as the saying goes, you know, one death is a tragedy and a million's a statistic. So we got tens of thousands of deaths of COVID here. And so it starts becoming just numbers instead of individual stories. But something like this is worth really focusing on, I think. So I really appreciate your time on the show.
Thank you.
All right, you guys. That is Ariel Zients, and she is writing for the Rapid City Journal there in South Dakota. Grandmother says Eagle Butte woman should have never been transferred to prison while pregnant. The Scott Horton Show, Anti-War Radio, can be heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, APSradio.com, antiwar.com, scotthorton.org, and libertarianinstitute.org.